In every show, there comes a song like this. It starts off soft and low and ends up with a kiss. Oh, where is the song that goes like this? Where is it? Where?
Hey everybody, this is Jim David. Welcome to my podcast again. The song you're hearing is from the Broadway musical Monty Python's Spamalot, the appropriately titled The Song That Goes Like This, sung by the dulcet tones of the very talented leading man, Mr. Christopher Sieber. For those of you who are listening to this podcast for the very first time, welcome. I hope you keep listening, and I hope you go back and listen to some of the earlier interviews, because they're all fascinating, whether you've heard of the person or not. And you can also subscribe to this podcast on iTunes. If you just go to the iTunes store, search Jim David's Icons, and then hit subscribe, boom, you're done, and you'll automatically get the podcast downloaded into iTunes every time I post a new one, which isn't more than a couple of times a month. If you're in a comedy mood while you're on iTunes, you can download my 3 comedy CDs, which are still hilarious, and also my novel You'll Be Swell for iPad, which you can also get on Amazon. And my novel You'll Be Swell is all about Broadway. I'm on a Broadway kick lately. The Tony Awards were just this past Sunday, and how cool is it that today I get to talk to a 2-time Tony Award nominee, the very, very talented leading man, Christopher Sieber. Chris, as you'll hear, is not only a great singer, he's also hilarious and very talkative and a really easy interview. All I had to do was just sit there and he just talked to me. And it's a real pleasure to know him. And this is a working Broadway actor, folks. This guy has been in 11 Broadway shows, including Beauty and the Beast, Thoroughly Modern Millie, Chicago, Into the Woods, Monty Python, Spamalot. And he was nominated for Shrek the Musical and Spamalot. In Shrek the Musical, he played Lord Farquhar, the short king. And so he played the entire part scooting around on his knees, which he will explain. On the day I spoke to him, he was in rehearsals for Broadway Bears, which is the annual benefit here in New York every year for Broadway Cares Equity Fights AIDS. And if you've never seen it, man, you've got to see it. It is the greatest burlesque show you're ever going to see. It's got a cast of hundreds, literally, of incredibly hot young singers and dancers who strip. And what could be better? And so we talk about that up front. So you're really going to enjoy this one. This is Christopher Sieber.
How long have you done Broadway
14
Bears?
14 years.
14 years.
14 years. Well, wow. No, 13 actually. Now it's 13.
Uh-huh.
It's actually 13. I think this is my 14th.
Uh-huh.
Because I started in 2000, so it's 13 years. Yeah, 13 years. God. My God, crazy.
And you just look at all this flesh.
Yeah, I mean, the first time you do it, you're like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God.
Back there.
Yeah, and then it's just, now you just see naked people. You
know, I can't imagine it ever getting old.
It doesn't get old, but you look at it differently after a while. It's just like, this is what we do, you know? It really is, so.
What'd you think of the Tony Awards?
I thought they were awesome. I thought that opening number was spectacular.
Unbelievable.
I thought it was so great, and Neil was so good.
He's always great.
So good. It was really exciting to see. I was really happy. And, you know, having been nominated twice and doing all that and knowing what everyone went through just yesterday alone.
What did they go through?
Because it starts off, you have to get up in the morning after your two-show day on Saturday.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah,
that's true.
And then you have rehearsal on Sunday, Sunday morning at 7 a.m.
The theater.
And you're just, yes, exactly. You've just done two shows.
Yeah.
And you're exhausted from doing that. Plus, coming up to the Tony Awards, you have to go to all these events, which is really great because you're part of it. You're part of it all.
Well, like, what are the events like?
Well, you have to go because there are so many voters, and you have to, like, I guess, court them in a way. You have to just show up.
This is sort of like the Oscar season where everybody's expected to go to all these
parties and all these things. Plus, you're doing your show. Plus, you're rehearsing for the Tony. Plus, you're doing recordings for the Tonys because a lot of the stuff, they want to make sure that it's perfect for the broadcast. So you actually pre-record a lot of stuff. And so a lot of vocals are already pre-recorded. And then that day, that Sunday morning, after you've done, you've done three shows, Friday, Saturday, Saturday, you go in Sunday morning, and you have to wait your turn, and then you get up there, and you get one shot, basically, maybe one shot or two shots of doing it in the space of Radio City. And then
that's it.
And then after that, you go back to the theater, you get undressed, you do that, you do your show, Then you get back into your costumes again. You have like an hour off, and then you get back into your stuff. And then you go to the Tony Awards, and then you just sit around and wait for your category to come up. It was just, oh, it was terrifying.
And you have to look fabulous.
Oh, you do, and rested, and just rested, like, oh, just, we do this. No, we do this all the time.
Just glib as hell.
No, just, oh, it's great.
Oh, yes, of course. I was thrilled to be here.
It was the year during Shrek I was nominated for Lord Farquaad, and so we rehearsed it, and like I said, the part alone of Lord Farquaad and Shrek is just exhausting.
Well, because you did it on your knees.
I did it on my knees, yeah. It was on my freaking knees.
I've often performed on my knees.
So, yeah, well, I had a whole speech planned if I had won, and it was like it's the first time I ever had to be on my knees after I got a job. You know, and it would have been great for the telecast, and everybody would have laughed, and the joke would have been great, but it didn't work.
Well,
out.
Now it can be told.
Now it's out there.
Now it's on the record.
Now it's on the record. But there is that year. That was so funny. I still have not watched that performance from the Tony Awards because
why?
My mind went blank. Here's why. So in the beginning of the song called "Welcome to Duloc," "What's Up, Duloc," Lord Farquaad is in this tight little castle thing with an elevator inside. And I'm on top, and I've got these little puppet legs that make these little kicking motions, and I'm just holding them with my hand.
Right.
And I'm doing a little cross with the leg and everything. Really funny bit. And then this elevator comes down, and these doors open up, and I march out. Things are looking up here in Duloc. Well, they built this elevator thing specifically for the Tony Awards. Then it was going to go out on the road. But on Broadway, I've been working with this thing since we were out in town of Seattle. There was a little lip. When the doors open, there's a little lip that I never even thought about, and I tripped on national television. I tripped on the way out. It looks like I did a flap or something like that, but to me, my mind went blank. My face and body went numb.
Oh,
I don't remember the number at all, and I had this terrified. I was just terrified because I was like, because it was not only was I on national television in front of 6,000 people at Radio City. However, you know,
there are gay bars
across the country that are watching that, and then like there's the sidetracks in Chicago,
it's the gay Super Bowl,
and then you're going to see, you know, that video is going to be played forever at sidetracks in Chicago on Musical Mondays. And they're going to say, hey, show that video again where Christopher Sieber falls on his frickin' face in front of the entire country.
You know what? I bet people didn't even... Did people notice?
Nobody even knew. Kevin even did. My husband didn't even know. He didn't even know.
See?
Oh, and so you get to the Tony Awards, by the way, too. And, you know, you do the red carpet. So that year, it was this incredible year with, like, James Gandolfini and Marcia Gay Harden. All these amazing actresses.
Stars to the left.
Oh my
stars
God.
To the
it was
right.
Just like to be nominated in that year was just like, oh my God, I'm with all these amazing people.
These people were nominated.
They were nominated on the same year I was. So I'm like, oh my God. So I do the red carpet. I'm between Marcia Gay Harden and James Gandolfini, and guess who's not getting their picture taken? Mm. That would be me.
Mm-hmm.
So I was just like, after a while, I was like, oh, let's just go in. So, and then I was up first, and then it was all over, and I was like, oh, thank God, it's over.
And then what's it like? I've always wanted to ask. I don't think I've ever asked this to anybody. What's it like when you have the cameras on you?
Oh, that was horrible.
And you have to smile.
Well, here's the
deal.
And
when somebody else wins?
Well, yeah.
Who won, by the way?
Well, it was Greg Jabara for Billy Elliot.
Yeah,
but,
okay.
You know, that year, my very good friends mm-hmm. were nominated
against
that year
you.
Against us. So uh-huh. It was like, you know, honestly, it was really great because I didn't, if anybody won, one of any of us won, it would have been just terrific. And Greg was the favorite, although I did have an actual chance, actually, with that part. And I thought maybe, you know, you never know. Hey, you've got 1 in 5 chances of getting it.
Mm-hmm.
So I went, when Greg won, I did stand up because he was a dear friend. I stood up for him, and I gave him a big round of applause because it was so great. But if you could bottle that feeling of hope and excitement when they open that envelope and the Tony Award goes to, the hope and excitement turns into despair and disappointment within a split second. And if you could bottle that feeling, I think there'd be a lot of people addicted to it.
And there's no relief.
There is kind of a relief when you don't win. There is kind of. But
did you ever, for a second, think this might happen?
Oh yeah.
Oh, so you practiced the speech?
I practiced the speech.
Yeah.
I was ready. I had some jokes in there and some quirky little things. People in one. It was going to be one of those memorable Tony speeches.
And then what was it like with Spamalot when you got nominated for that?
That was. That was my first one, and I was kind of, well, not kind of, I was overlooked on all the other awards, like the Drama Desk and the Outer Critics and the Drama League. I was completely overlooked.
These are luxury problems.
Yes, I know.
May I just
I know,
say.
Right? They're luxury problems. But, you know, and after a while, you know, because it was such an ensemble piece, Spamalot, and everybody had such a great... I mean, everybody was so amazing in the show, so if it went to somebody again, it was great. Out of the blue, I was literally... I believe Kevin and I were doing it when my agent called at 8 a.m. to say I got a Tony nomination. Because I didn't expect it, so I was just like, oh, whatever, you know, it's okay. So I was literally like, we were doing it, and he said, it's 8 o'clock. Who's calling at 8 o'clock? I was like, I don't know. So then I answered, and I got the voicemail, and Richard called me. He says, you have a Tony nomination! You have a Tony nomination! Call me!
I don't know what's weirder to me, the fact that you got a Tony nomination while you were having sex, yep. Or the fact that you were doing it at 8 in the morning.
Oh, yeah, we were up.
See, because I will not be, there will not be sex at 8 in the morning.
We
in
were
this,
up
in
and
this
going.
Boy's life.
We were up and going. It was going to start the day right.
Nuh-uh. Now, Kevin was an actor, right?
He was an actor for a while. That's where we met. We met doing Beauty and the Beast on Broadway. He was the Fork and I was Gaston.
He was the Fork.
He was a sexy Fork.
Woo! Whoa!
Oh, man.
I bet he was.
We called him the BBOB, Best Butt on Broadway.
Really?
Oh! To this day, still awesome. But
really?
Like, yeah, in his little costume. We became really good friends in Beauty and the Beast, which was really cool, although we fancied each other, but we didn't let it on. And then we would hang out in one of the dressing rooms because in Beauty and the Beast, as Gaston, you have about 40 minutes between Act 1 and Act 2 before you come back in. So we would just hang out in a dressing room. The guy who played Maurice and LeFou, we would just hang out, and all four of us would just giggle and laugh and tell stories and laugh. And then Kevin and I started getting a little closer and closer. And,
yeah.
And it turned into something. And I was like, well, I kind of want to date you. And he says, well, I have that rule, don't shit where you eat. And I was like, okay, I do too. So then he got a job. I was like, okay, let's date. So we did. And he did the full Monty on the tour. And then he came and did it on Broadway. And I was still doing Beauty and the Beast. And we dated, and we've been together ever since. It's been great.
How long has it been?
It's been 13 years.
Oh, cool.
Yeah,
I just had my 25th.
All right. We got married. We got married October 24th,
right,
2011.
I remember. I sent you the book.
Yeah. It was so cool. So we got married and everything. And
yeah. It makes a difference,
doesn't it?
We did it right here in the living room.
It
makes a difference after you say the vows, doesn't it? I don't care where you do it.
It does change.
Our wedding night was... it felt different because we stood up in front of 100 people and said, I'm going to stay with you for the rest of my life.
Mm-hmm.
And it does make a difference.
It does.
I don't care what anybody says. And I say this over and over again in my act. It is not gay marriage. It is marriage.
Mm-hmm.
That's all it is.
Yeah.
That's it. Gay marriage is not... It's not like he says, you know, you may... I now pronounce you married. You may now sodomize the bride. It doesn't...
Take him behind the deck.
You know...
Well,
you may sacrifice the infant.
It was so funny, but I don't know, remember registering at City Hall?
Mm-hmm.
It was like the happiest place on earth.
I know it. And everybody was happy.
Everybody was happy, except the information guy. He's like, what are you here for?
We're
here to get married. Take a number, go over there.
Exactly, it's the same
but
thing.
But everybody else, oh, you're getting married? Oh, we are too. Oh my God, it was so much fun.
Oh yeah, and all the straight couples down there.
They were the same. They were like, congratulations, oh my God, this is so
I know,
great.
What the funniest thing was, it's like going to, you know, Whole Foods. You know, it's like, now serving, one.
Yeah.
Seven.
And we were like waiting with our little number.
I still have my little number on the refrigerator.
Yeah, we still have it somewhere too.
But it's faded.
We're 50.
Oh, 58. Oh, look at you. You have Ryan Reynolds.
Well, see, that's...
You have
that's,
Ryan Reynolds and Channing Tatum and Ryan Gosling
on my fridge.
On the refrigerator.
Because, you know, I did this Mark Fisher Fitness.
Oh, so this is a motivation.
Motivation. And actually, they tell you to find pictures of your ideal body, of what you want.
Well, there you go.
And I kind of reached Channing Tatum, actually. I'm pretty close to Channing Tatum.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, because he's still... You know, listen, I'm a big guy from the Midwest, and I'm always going to have fat on me.
Yeah.
I'm just one of those people.
Well, I'm sort of like, Mr. Drummond from Different Strokes and Mr. Furley from Three's
Mr.
Company
Furley,
had
Mr.
a baby.
Well,
it came out of Barry Manilow.
It's just, so...
Did you, I mean, was there any question about you being out as a performer? Because you're a semi-public figure. Well,
yeah.
We are. Well, we're both public figures.
Yeah.
And we've just decided to go ahead and... Put our lives out there.
I had when I did a series called Two of a Kind with the Olsen twins.
Yeah, yeah. I wanted to ask you about that.
97 or 98.
How long was that on a season?
That was one season, but we played every for like 6 years on the ABC Family. They played the one season over and over and over again for 6 years.
Because it was
the
Olsen twins.
Yeah, but people watched it. So the demographic was 12, 13-year-old girls. So for years, all these 12-year-old girls would come up to me like, oh my God, Kevin Burke.
And you were who? You were their father?
I was their dad. Yeah.
Your dad?
I was their dad, yeah. It was crazy. It was right after Full House.
What are they like?
They were lovely.
Oh, they were cute.
They were 12. at the time.
Oh, they were just 12. They weren't little nymphs.
No, they weren't little infants. That was after Full House. So this was their, where they actually played each other. They played themselves because their names were Mary-Kate and Ashley on the show.
Oh my God.
And I looked back. I was looking, because we're renovating a house right now. I was looking back at all these videos and happened to have the old VHS tapes of the show, what they give you, you know, so that you could see the episode before it airs. And, you know, and watching this, I was like, God, I was so young. And also they were so young, and it was a good show, but, you know, it was so ABC Family. It was so like, it's almost Disney Channel now. Uh-huh. If you look at it, it's so like, you know, hey, kids, want to go for a ride? No. What the? Wait a minute. If you're here, then that means what? You know, one of those jokes, you know, all those. Yeah, it's kind of like that, you know, getting glued together, all those old classic, you know, sitcom rules that you must do, you know. So Bob Boyette, who's now a very prolific theater producer, he produced like Happy Days and Mork and Mindy and Laverne and Shirley and Step by Step and Full House and all these shows. So he had you know, been doing this for a long time. And when we were doing the pilot, he said, hey, would you like to fly your wife out? And I said, yeah. And I was dating some guy at the time, and I was like, sure. And I talked to his secretary, his assistant, named Diane Murphy.
So you were not out
to
them?
No, well, I wasn't out to them, but I'm out to everybody else, and it was just weird. So it was Hollywood, though, and I didn't know how to handle that. It was my first pilot, my first sitcom, first ever dealing with going to Warner Brothers at Burbank and working mm-hmm. there. It's crazy. So I didn't know how it worked, so I just wanted to make sure that I was doing it right. And I talked to Diane Murphy, who's one of my best friends now, and she was Bob's assistant, and said, Diane, Bob keeps asking me if I want to bring my wife out. And here's the deal. My wife has a boyfriend. And she's like, oh, that's not fine. No, we'll do it anyway. And I was like, well, I don't know. What do I do? He says, well, Bob will want to talk to you. I was like, great, no problem. So we had a meeting with Tom Miller and Bob Boyette in their big cushy office at Burbank Warner Brothers, you know.
Uh-huh.
And he said, I understand that you have a boyfriend. I said, yeah. He says, that's no problem. I said, so I don't know how to handle it out here. What do we do? He says, you make a big deal out of it, it'll be a big deal. If you don't, it won't. Believe me. I've seen it all the time. I've seen it through everybody and, you know, all these people closeted and all that other stuff. If you don't make a big deal out of it, it won't become one. And so I didn't. And it never was a problem to me. I don't think it was ever a problem. Once you're out, and it's okay.
Nobody cares. Well, it's like when I came out to the world on my Comedy Central special,
uh-huh.
and because I wasn't known,
you're well, gay.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's now it can be told. I was not well known when I came out on my special, so there was nary a peep.
Mm-hmm.
But nobody, I got a little publicity about it, and you know. In the Advocate, you know, they noticed.
Right.
Says, openly gay comedian. Because I was the first.
It was so funny, too. Like
I was the first one.
Because I, you know, I've been on the cover of Out twice, the cover of Advocate, I think, three times. I've been the Out 100 twice, and all these magazines, which is so great. And, you know, and it's great that they do celebrate, you know, the gay couples, except that they always put straight people on the cover. You know, it was strange. But the thing, openly gay. I was like, yeah, I'm just happen to be.
I hate that phrase. Yeah, openly gay.
Yeah, it's weird, right?
You don't know. I hate it. It sounds like there's something to hide. It's like openly a pyromaniac.
Right. Yeah. You know.
I hate it.
I'm an avid shoe wearer.
I hate all of those phrases. I hate openly gay. I hate gay marriage.
Yeah.
I hate any of the different things. Any of the difference now, because I believe it's like I've gotten to the point where no. Folks, this is your problem.
Right,
this is not,
right,
our,
it's not
problem.
Our problem. And it was that whole thing about, like, tolerance. You know, we have to tolerate. No, you don't have to tolerate me. Yeah, you have to respect me.
You have to.
You know?
Yeah. I was up till 4:30 because I was in Atlantic City all week. And we drove back from Atlantic City last night, so I missed the broadcast live.
Mm.
It's like Atlantic City is the most...
depressing place.
It's I think it may be the most depressing place in the country.
Yeah, it's not fun. I worked there. I used to work there at Harris Casino. I did shows at Broadway by the Bay Theater.
Yeah.
We did Anything Goes there. We did Some Like It Hot there. We did Meet Me in St. Louis and Bye Bye Birdie there at the big Broadway by the Bay Theater. And the casino audiences are so great because they don't respond. It's the human zoo that's Atlantic City.
It's like they just, you walk along the boardwalk and you think, not all life is precious.
You looked yourself in the mirror and said, this'll do.
This'll do.
This'll do.
I hate to be a snob about
it. Come on.
But it's like, come on.
You know, take the rollers out of your hair before you go out.
Oh, I know. They would come into the audience with the rollers.
Oh, yeah.
They just, it's like they show up in wife beaters. Mm-hmm. They show up,
flip-flops.
At least they don't do that on Broadway. That hasn't made it to Broadway yet.
You know, because I was traveling, you probably see this, you know, traveling around the world, country and everything, but the one thing I always see, and I've tried to make a difference, and I'm trying to change the world, but every time I fly, I always wear very nice shoes, very nice pants, and very nice shirt and tie, and possibly a sweater with a little bow, maybe sometimes a bow tie. You know, and I'm trying to change the world because I like to dress up if I'm on a plane, because that used to be a glamorous thing. Now you got get a guy on with a wife beater on and the Who Farted It hat.
How was it playing Alban in Cajofolo?
I will say, well, first of all, I never expected to be in the show ever.
Why?
Here's why. Okay, so I had finished. Oh God, what did I finish? I finished something. I get a phone call and say, "Hey, do you want to do Chicago again?" Because I'd done Chicago on Broadway playing Billy Flynn. Like three times.
Uh-huh.
And so it had been 7 years since I had done the show, and they called me and said, "Hey, you want to come and do it?" And I said, "Sure." So I'm in line to refresh my memory to see the show because I hadn't seen it in 7 years. And I'm in a line, and my agent calls me. It's a Sunday. And they call me and say, they don't want you to see Chicago today. They want you to see La Cage aux Folles. And I said, "Well, that's strange. I'm not going into that show." And they said, "Well, They want you to go see it and see what you think." I was like, "That's odd." Okay, so I went to see the show, and Harvey Fierstein was in it at the time.
Uh-huh.
I had knew nothing. Jeffrey Tambor took over for Kelsey Grammer, mm-hmm. and he lasted 10 performances, and then he just bolted. He just said goodbye.
He couldn't do it,
and he just got up and left.
Why couldn't he do it?
The official reason is because his hip, he just had hip replacement.
Uh-huh.
But the real reason is, scoop central here, he could not remember a damn line.
Really?
Yeah, and it's a big part, George.
Sure.
Yeah, so anyway. So I go see the show. Harvey's wonderful, as always. I go backstage.
Oh, so they wanted you to replace him.
I had no idea. So I go and see Harvey backstage after the show that I just saw. He pulls me in a dressing room, slams the door, and says, "Are you going to do the show?" "What show?" "Are you going to do the show with me? I need you." "What?" "I need you to do the show with me. Jeffrey Tambor just up and left. I don't have anybody to play opposite me. You got to help me." I was like, okay. So that was Sunday, and then like the following Friday, I was in the show. I was 7 days, so it was like Tuesday, I think. It was the next Tuesday I was in the show, and I had 7 days to go in the show. And I was
seven days
later, I was starring opposite Harvey Fierstein on Broadway in La Cage aux Folles.
7 days.
Seven days.
You had to learn the show.
I had to learn this whole big...
What about his understudy?
He was on.
Oh, he was on?
He was on. So,
and who was that guy?
Chris Hoke, who was a friend of mine, who actually understudied me in many shows. You know, he did Beauty and the Beast with me. He did Spamalot with me.
Let me ask you a Broadway question.
Yes.
Why did they not give him the part?
Who, Chris?
Yeah. Why did they not go ahead and just give the understudy the part?
Because he's more valuable as the understudy, because they know so many parts, so it would take time. Because then they would.
So he's understudying both Alban and
exactly,
George.
And then they wouldn't have a cover.
Right.
They wouldn't have a cover, so
okay.
Because it would take so much more time to find somebody to do it. So it'd be easier just to find somebody to do the part. So I went in, anyway, Harvey and I, it was a crazy whirlwind thing, and I get in there, I'm doing it, and it's crazy, and... But Harvey and I have known each other for 20 years, and so we're friends. And the chemistry between us was just amazing because, you know, we're friends and we love each other, and that's what those parts need. So Barry Weisler steps into a dressing room one day. He says, "I was wondering if you wanted to go on tour, you two, you know, go on tour." And I was like, "Oh, go on tour with Harvey? That would be a blast." And then Harvey says, "No, I can't do it. I'm doing this little thing called Newsies, and I'm doing this little show that just won the Tony Award called Kinky Boots." And so he couldn't do it. So I was like, "Oh, all right, well, I'll find something else to do." So then Barry Weisler comes to me a couple days later. He says, "Hey, would you like to do La Cage, the tour still? I think we have George Hamilton." And I said, "Well, George will look pretty weird in a dress." I said, no, he's going to play George, you're going to play Alban." "Okay, sure, that sounds like fun. I've always wanted to work with George, and I hear he's lovely." And so we went on tour.
Wow.
We went on tour together, and George was...
What was he like?
He was lovely.
He's old Hollywood.
He's old Hollywood and charming as hell. Funny.
How old is he now?
He's 175 years old.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
175.
He looks great. He's such a sweetheart. He really is. He's such a nice guy. I mean, he'll be the first one to tell you, though, he couldn't remember a lot of lines, so I was playing ventriloquist a lot of the time.
During the show.
And giving him his lines and everything like that. And I always had his back, and he knew that, and he really appreciated it. And if he was a jerk, I would be like, out of there. I'd be like, goodbye. But he was such a sweetheart, and he worked his ass off. He worked his ass off. Every single show, he had a little podium backstage with his book so he could go over his lines before he came on stage, because he was so afraid of not knowing his lines. And I kept telling him, George, you know them, you got them. But he wouldn't trust himself to just let go. And so there were times when he just went up, and I just had to, I know what you're thinking, and say his line. You know, and or like literally, like not ooh your mitts, and actually get into it like that, and give him little eye motions, like this is where you put
see,
your
this
hand.
Is, you know, what's amazing. It's like, this is George Hamilton, who's had a 50 year career,
yeah,
and here he is having
I was a puppet master.
He's a human being. He's like just a regular guy.
It's funny
who happens to
my friend Billy Tye, who was his Jean Michel, our son, who played our son on the. He was the only one, he and I were the only one that really understood what we had to do to make sure that George knew where he was going. Mm-hmm. And so Billy decided to leave, and I was like, oh, you can't leave. You can't leave. You can't go. Because he depends on you to get around. He depends on which, where do I go? Because we would grab his arm sometimes and then lead him around, and he was totally fine with it, you know. And I inadvertently pissed him off one time. I think it was in Toronto, and there was this moment where he was always kind of upstage of me, but he just that's where he felt comfortable, but he wasn't in the light, and I'm trying to help him come on downstage a little bit, because people, you're tan, people can't see you, all they see is eyeballs and teeth. So come on downstage, the light's great. And he kept on going back up, and we had a rehearsal, and he was like, oh, I get it, okay, great. So then he did it for two shows, and then he went right back to his like little favorite spot in the dark. And I inadvertently, because I'd been helping him for a year already. I'd been helping him for a little year and a month at this point. And just, I did this little gesture, kind of come down stage. I just kind of looked at him and went, wah, wah, with my hand to come down stage. He got so pissed off at me.
On the stage.
Well, yeah, but I had been doing that for a year already.
But all of a sudden,
I think it was just a little too much or something. And I inadvertently pissed him off. However, the first time ever that he was alive and vibrant and just pissed off, and he had this anger and this energy behind it, and I was like, oh my God, he's alive, he's great. And he's like, but he was pissed off. He was really pissed off at me. And then afterwards I was like, George, I think I pissed you off. He says, yeah, well, you did that thing right on stage, you know. I kind of humiliated him. That's what he felt. I humiliated him. And I, of course, that was never ever my intention. But he...
Oh, let's get real.
Well, no.
Steve Harrington.
No. Yeah, I'm going to throw marbles. I'm going to throw marbles and let him slide all over it. But
right.
It was never my...
Of course
because
not.
I adore
wanted to
him.
Help him.
Yeah, I adore him. And sure. It's something we'd worked on. Anyway, so he... So we smoothed... It was fine. It was fine. But I had inadvertently pissed him off. And you know, I said, George, you know, that was never, ever... I adore you. I would never, ever humiliate you like that. And I'm sorry if you felt that I did that. I really, really, truly apologize. But, you know, the great thing is we become great friends. It's, you know, it's really cool. I mean, I have George Hamilton in my cell phone. How weird is that?
That's
hey,
wild.
George, what's going on?
That's
hey,
wild.
Hey, Scooter. And then right after that, that show took so much out of me. Because it's Alban and Zaza, and people don't realize. It's 3.5 hours nonstop.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of those shows. I mean, any show from now on will never be as hard as Lekaj was.
Really?
Lekaj is so hard. Because on top of helping George and then doing my part on top of that, then the travel and all that other stuff. And I had to live like a nun. You couldn't go out because you had to sing I Am What I Am. You had to belt out this crazy song, you know, at the end of Act 1. And the energy it takes just to get...
People don't realize...
It's athletic.
You know...
It was athletic.
People don't realize, like, how you have to work at your craft.
Oh, it's so hard.
If somebody came and offered me like a major part like that, I don't know that I would be up for it simply because I'm out of practice.
Uh-huh. But every, you know what?
To be able to do it.
No, really, honestly, every role that ever I auditioned for, every role that I ever get, what do they call it? The vampires come out and they said, you're not good enough. You're never going to be great. You can't do this. What are you doing? That always, always, every single audition, every single part I do.
Does it? Even now?
Even now. Every single time.
Really?
Every single time. Like, I have an audition on Wednesday and I'm like, I can't do this. And you can. You just have to fucking get over yourself and just do it and just get in there. But the what is it, that thing from that Susan Blackwell wrote in title of show, it's like Die Vampire Die, because all these things, all these thoughts that come in your head, and the vampires are the ones that suck all the fun and all your energy and all your creativity.
I call that the devil on your shoulder.
The devil on your shoulder, yeah.
The devil on your shoulder saying you're not good enough, you're not
and then when
smart
you're not,
enough,
of course,
you're not talented enough.
And of course when your one job ends, I go into, I will never, ever work again.
Oh, yeah.
It's all over. Mm-hmm. The dream is done.
See, that's... Let me tell you something. That's one good thing about stand... There are not that many good things about stand-up comedy. I know that I will work again.
Mm-hmm.
I will.
No.
I mean, I'm already booked into 2015.
Mm-hmm. Good.
You know what it is about... Is it something about performers that we think... We secretly harbor the suspicion that we ourselves are just not that good?
I mean, that's a weird, you know, it's weird because, you know, when you're doing it, people always say, you know, after performances, you know, oh, you're so great, you're so good, and all this other stuff. But when it's over, you don't have those people, I guess, telling you that anymore. And I feel like I'm being left out, you know, it's like, everybody else is going on a trip, and I wasn't invited. But, you know,
but you've been nominated for two Tony Awards
and all tons of awards.
And you have made your living as a performer.
I've done 11 Broadway shows.
11
I've done
Broadway
four
shows.
Off-Broadway
how many people?
Shows, two series.
Listen, how many people want your life, including me?
I know, and I have to keep on telling myself, "Shut up, you little pussy." Oh, you're not working for 6 weeks. I know it's pathetic, but you know it's something that that's something that actually happens to me. It always happens. Yeah, and then I'll keep myself up at night worrying. It's crazy.
Really?
Yeah, it's crazy. You know, the good thing about, like, literally watching the Tony Awards last night, it also reminds you that only one person can get that award. And the good thing is Tom Hanks didn't win last night. I mean, that kind of makes you feel better knowing that, yeah, you didn't win, but either the Tom fucking Hanks, you know... He didn't win. I mean, those immensely talented.
They gave
people.
It to Tracy Letts, who's a playwright.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean, and that's and an actor. That's something. I mean, that is. You just remember, it's like, yeah, it'll happen,
mm-hmm.
but just not now.
Right. What's your favorite musical? Quick.
So far, or the one I've done, or the one I've seen?
First, your favorite musical of all time.
Ever? Music Man.
The Music Man?
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Got trouble right here in River City.
Really?
That stands for pool.
Of course. Well, it's kind of brilliant.
I love it.
Have you ever done it?
No, I'm dying to.
You'd be a good one.
I would love to play Harold Hill. I would love to. One of my favorite shows to do, though, was, I think, Thoroughly Modern Millie. I loved doing that show.
Mm-hmm.
Playing Trevor Graydon. And I was with the original Broadway cast. I replaced Mark Kudish, and the original Broadway cast was still there, so I got to work with the original Broadway cast, which was so great. And Sutton Foster... and Sutton and I dubbed several things together, and my favorite song is "Gimme Gimme" from that. Still, it's such a great song, and "Gimme Gimme" that thing called love.
Mm-hmm.
I want it. Gimme Gimme that thing called love. I crave it. Oh, and Way Sutton sang it. It was just incredible, and I'm like waiting off stage left, while she's singing that song. And just seeing her whip that thing out. I mean, it was crazy. When I went into the show, again, I had 5 days to learn this part and go in. I was just like, call Sieber. He can go in 4 days. So call Sieber.
But you know what, though? That's a wonderful thing that they will call Sieber.
They'll call me.
You've got enough of the contacts and you've got enough of the reputation.
It's happened 3 times now. It was like, it happened for Millie. It happened for Spamalot. Spamalot actually happened that way, too, because... I was in Los Angeles doing Company, and I was playing Bobby in Company. And that show, I don't know if you ever done it or
no,
anybody.
I know it.
If you know it, okay. Well, to play Bobby, you kind of have to put yourself going down the rabbit hole of the part. You really have to get into it. You can't skate above it. You have to dig yourself right into it. And it's exhausting because it's emotionally exhausting. And
yeah.
I went down and I was literally like and just shaken, I guess, shaken to my core. So I got on the plane coming back because my agent wanted me to audition for it. And I'm flying back from Los Angeles on a red eye to audition at 11 a.m. And, of course, I just finished this show, and I'm just rattled. And I slept through the audition. I didn't wake up till 4. I was so exhausted. I didn't wake up till 4 in the afternoon. People calling my cell phone. My cell phone was off, and Kevin was at work, and he thought I was dead. And so he came in, and I was like, he's like, "Are you all right? Are you alive?" And I said, "What? What? You slept through your audition." I was like, "Fuck, that's 4 o'clock. Oh, my God." So I didn't get the part. So Douglas Sills got the part. However, Doug Sills decided to leave the show in rehearsals. And so Bob Boyette, again, called me and said, "Hey, Chris, I need you." I said, "Okay, just tell your agent Tara Rubin's going to call." Tara Rubin's a casting director.
Yeah.
I said, "Sure." So Tara Rubin calls, and then Richard calls me back. He says, "They want you to go in for Spamalot." I was like, "Oh, okay. What? Okay." And then Tara Rubin calls me the next morning at 7 a.m. And she says, "Chris, it's Tara Rubin. Can you be in front of Mike Nichols and Eric Idle at 11? It's 7 in the morning. I'm like, "Tara, call me back in 15, 20 minutes because I don't even know who you are right now because I'm just out of it. I don't know what's happening." She said, "Okay, no problem. So she called me back and I say, "Okay, what?" And she said, "We need you to come in for Spamalot today now." Okay. And she said, "I'm going to send you all the stuff. Do you have a funny song?" And I said, "I've got a few, but nothing." She said, "Just find something and make it funny." I was like, "No problem. I got that." So
what'd you sing?
I sang Agony from Into the Woods. You know, the two brothers.
I don't know that song.
High in a tower, she sits by the hour, maintaining her hair, blithe and becoming. Agony, all the tortures they teach. But the two brothers are singing. They're singing about these women that they've met, their fairy tale creatures.
And yeah.
I sang it as one person with a split personality. So I'm answering myself. "Am I not handsome and clever, well-mannered, considerate, passionate, charming, as kind as I'm handsome, and heir to a throne? You are everything ladies could wish for. Then why no duenna? The girl must be mad.
God.
You're not nothing of madness." And apparently...
God damn.
And it worked.
I wish people could see. I wish
so
we were on video.
Bizarre. But it was also so, again, just whirlwind. Like, what? Okay, let's do it. And I think that's a good thing. When you don't have time to think about it, you don't have time to... Just freaking do it. And but it was weird because I went into the audition, and you know, in an audition situation, you go into the room, the creative team is already there, the director, choreographer, the musical director, everybody's already in the room. I get there, there's nobody in the room. I'm in the room because they're coming from rehearsal. So I'm in the room alone waiting for this thing to happen, and in walks Eric Idle, my comic idol, and he says, "Christopher, all right? Eric Idle, very nice to meet you." I was like, "Oh, geez, it's Eric Idle." And then Mike Nichols, "My boy, how are you, Mike Nichols?" I was like, "I know who you are." And then they said, "Do the opening sequence when you first meet my character," which was Dennis Galahad. And he does this thing, "Old woman, man, sorry, man." I was like, "Sorry, I thought you were a woman." "Dennis, what? My name's Dennis." I was like, "I didn't know you were called Dennis." "Well, you didn't bother to find out, did you?" All that. And then there's the guard scene, which was one of my favorite things ever to do, the guard scene where the guard is, I was like, "Make sure the prince doesn't leave this room until I come and get him." And then the guard answers, "Not to leave the room, even if you come and get him." No, "Until I come and get him, you're not to leave the room. Not to enter the room, not until you come and get him." And it goes on and on.
Genius about Monty Python is that they can do that kind of
ridiculous
stuff.
It's
utterly ridiculous.
But doing it with David Hyde Pierce.
Oh, yeah.
Who, you know, and I was literally thrown in they were leaving for Chicago in 3 days to start the show, to start tech and previews in Chicago. And I joined the cast 3 days before they left for
Look
Chicago.
Look at you in your career.
So, and I jumped in, and David was sweet enough, because, you know, it's just all of a sudden, here's the script, here's the score, here's the choreography, go. And they're like, "Ah!" And they've already been rehearsing for 5 weeks. So you're like, "Ah!" And David was so... And David and I worked together on it. We did a show in Los Angeles years ago. And he said, "Come here, we're going to do the guard scene. I'm going to tell you, you know, what it needs to be." And he helped me out a little bit, and it worked out. And then Eric took me... When we were in Chicago, Eric took me aside, and he helped me with some lines and everything. And they were very good to me, which is very sweet. And they understood the situation, because, you know, I had a little breakdown when they changed Act 2 before we even left for Chicago. Or right before we left for Chicago, Eric Idle wrote an entire new Act 2. And, of course...
The whole thing.
The whole thing. Act 2 was completely different. And so, of course, though, he changed it. And I, of course, I thought it was my fault that I'm ruining a Broadway musical. That's where I go. I go from headache to brain tumor.
It's all my fault.
It's all my fault. And so I was like crying and sobbing. I was like, you're changing it because of me. I'm sad. And the real reason is, yes, they were changing it because of me, but in a good way. And then we did it, and it was just one of my favorite things to do. It truly was.
Chris, thank you for talking to me, and I want your career.
Oh, I want it back. It's only been 6 weeks.
Do you have another show coming up?
I hope so. Yeah, I'm hoping to go back into Chicago, actually, mm-hmm. on Broadway. Yeah, I love that show. It's so much fun to do. I really love doing it. It's really easy, and I like playing that part. Mm-hmm. I really do. It's a revolving door over there, so you know your contract's only 6 or 8 weeks or something like that. So.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they say, okay, you're not going to do it again for a while. I'm like, oh, I want to stay. So I called Barry Weisler a couple weeks ago. I said, Barry, I want to come home. He's like, oh, you do? I was like, yeah, of course. I love it. I love it there. So hopefully I'll get back there. If not, I've got a bunch of auditions coming up for a bunch of new shows, so that's good. So.
Well, you're always going to work because you're great.
I hope so. I hope so. Thanks, Jim.
And you're not you're not never going to work again, and they don't really hate you.
I know.